We're continuing our series on migration and halachic response to migration. The prospect of migration created the need at times to reevaluate earlier halachic sources. And we're moving from last session of the Gaonic era to now the Tosafist era of the 12th and 13th centuries. We're going to study how the Tosafists viewed the issue of making aliyah, migrating to Eretz Yisrael. We hope to study a conflict in some primary sources, and then learn perhaps some background to this era to help us begin to figure out how to resolve this conflict and perhaps understand better the view of the Tosafists in making aliyah. Making aliyah meant something different in the times of the Talmud, in the times of the Tosafists, and today. So today, perhaps, why do people make aliyah? Maybe to usher in the Messianic era, maybe because of anti-Semitism, maybe because they want to be part of history, the spiritual quality of the land. The Gemara doesn't explicitly say there's a mitzvah to make aliyah, but the Gemara seems to indicate a strong preference to living in Israel, so much so that the Gemara in Ksuba Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis states that Hu Omer Lalas V'Omer Shalolas, so if the husband wants to make aliyah and his wife doesn't want to make aliyah, Kofi No Solalos, he can force her to make aliyah. Hu Omer Shalolas V'Omer Shalolas, so Kofi No Solalos. If she wants to make aliyah and he does not want to make aliyah, we force him to make aliyah. Each spouse has the right to force the other to make aliyah. And if not, the other side will be disadvantaged in a divorce proceeding. Now, Tosafists, they're mostly the French school of the 12th and 13th centuries. So they write, Tosafists, the commentary writes in Ksuvos Daf Yud Amud Beis, Eino Nohag Bizman Hazeh. This halacha, that the husband can compel, or the wife can compel, aliyah, does not apply nowadays. Deika sakanas drachim, that there is danger on the roads. Vayomer Rabbeinu Chaim, and Rabbeinu Chaim, so this Rabbeinu Chaim is Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen. He was an older student of Rabbeinu Tam who lived in the 12th century. And he says, Dachshav, there's no obligation, or eno mitzvah ladur b'Eretz Yisrael, there's no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Ki yesh kama mitzvah talios b'aretz, because there are many mitzvahs that depend on the land. V'kama onshin de'ein anu yicholim lizar b'hem lamod aleihem. And there are many punishments, so we don't know how to be careful with them and to be able to handle all these different new mitzvahs talios b'aretz. So because we can't observe halacha properly in Eretz Yisrael, better not make aliyah. So we have two different reasons according to this Tosfos. One is it's dangerous, and number two is you can't keep mitzvot at Tlius Baretz. It seems that there's no inherent mitzvot to live in Eretz Yisrael, or at least that's not the primary concern. The question is, can you observe mitzvot or not in Eretz Yisrael? If you can't, so then Rabbeinu Chaim says you should not make aliyah. Now there's a Mordechai. Is Mordechai ben Hillel. He was a student of Meir of Rothenburg. He was born in 1240. He was martyred with his wife and five children in 1298 during the Ridfleisch massacres. He wrote a collection of Tosafot commentaries and Tshuvos and called the Mordechai. And he cites this Rabbeinu Chaim, who says, Dahani mili b'yimeim shayah shalom b'drachim. He said, these words that the spouse can compel the other spouse to make aliyah only applies in the time when there is peace on the roads. But now that the roads are confusing, or there seem to be, I'm not sure if they're dangerous, but they're mishubashim. It's not a good situation. And on the roads, he can't force her to have like a mochafet. It's like he wants to bring her to a place of bandits and wild animal and armed robbers. And even if he will appoint for her guarantors, but the guarantor, even though he wants to protect her, but the guarantor needs his own guarantor, meaning he might not be successful. So what's interesting is this Mordechai clarifies that it's the Rabbeinu Chaim who also held of the other reason of that it's dangerous. So there are two reasons that are brought down in this Tosfos, in the Mordechai. And it seems both come from Rabbeinu Chaim in the mid-12th century. Not clear which is the primary reason. One reason is danger, and number two, it's because we can't keep the mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael. But it's pretty clear what the view of the Tosafists were at the beginning of the beginning, middle of the 12th century. However, there are other Tosafists, there's another view. And here the Shut Merami Rotenberg, who is Rameir of Rothenburg, he was the Gadol HaDor in Ashkenaz in the 13th century. He tried to leave Germany and he was famously taken prisoner, and students wanted to redeem him for an exorbitant sum, but he said don't do it because then they're just going to take more rabbis or leader rabbinic figures as captives and charge an exorbitant sum. So he dies in prison. In any case, so he's in a tshuva, Simon Reish Gimel says, Shemotayach Brurot, your teachings are clear, Kashemesh Mirot, like the sun, they illuminate, Baki Bachaf Dorot, you're an expert of 20 seemingly generations, Yedidi HaRab Menachem. So he's writing to his friend Rab Menachem. Le'in Neder Shenadarta La'alos Le'eretz Yisrael. Regarding the neder, the promise, the vow that you issue, that you're going to make aliyah, filu al das rabim, even if you did it publicly, where it's much harder to annul, yesh lo hafara, you can't annul, d'achrei she'ishcha hara, because your wife is pregnant. Ein kol davar omer b'pikuach nefesh, v'yesh sakana l'alicha ubra, v'gam havlad ad she'ishcha, v'vikantzi mosach ha'kayas, because this is an issue of pikuach nefesh, a life-threatening situation, there's a danger to bring her pregnant, and it's also dangerous to bring the baby until he gets stronger, until perhaps the summer months. Don't tell me it's not pikuach nefesh that he can go without his wife. He can't leave her in Aguna without going to Eretz and leaving her there. And so he says because his wife is pregnant, that does not allow him her to make aliyah. Now the Agos Maimonios was Rameir HaKohen. He was a German rabbinical leader at the end of the 13th century, born around 1260. He writes a running commentary on the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. He was also killed during the Rindfleisch massacres. And he quotes this exact same tshuva that was found in the Marachut Merami Rundberg, except what he adds, he says, Vishalom, the end of the comment, Shimshon Beravi Avram. So this tshuva, saying that a husband who has a pregnant wife should not make aliyah. So this was Shimshon, the son of Avram, but we perhaps were better known as the Rash Mishantz. He was born in 1150, died in 1230, and he was a student also of Rabbeinu Tam. And what's known is that there was persecution of Jews by Pope Innocent III. But at some point, shortly after this, the Rash Mishantz joined 300 English and French rabbis in emigrating to Eretz Yisrael about the year 1211. He dies in Akko in 1230. There is a historical work called Shevet Yehuda. It's a 16th century Sephardic historical work. And there we read about a journey by 300 Tosafists from France and apparently also in England, that they went in the year 4971, which is 1211 CE. And it describes how 300 Tosafists made Aliyah in the year 1211. Professor Kannerfogel, who writes a lot on Jewish history in the medieval period, he thinks that the number or the high quality of rabbis who arrived in Israel around 1211 cannot be confirmed. This work that said there were 300 Tosafists, this was written in the 16th century, hundreds of years later. The total number of French and German Tosafists known to us has not even reached 300. So, and it was written long after the fact, so it's probably some embellishment. Although there is It is historically reliable that a number of leading Tosafists did in fact leave northern France and England for Eretz Yisrael at this time. Maybe 300 also includes lesser rabbis or students. Their motives are unknown, but it seems to be spiritual or intellectual, not economic, or for because of the political situation or religious pressure. Because if that was the case, it was an economic concern or the political situation or religious pressure, then why would only the Tosafists go and their families and their students? Really, many Jews should have gone. In fact, that only these very spiritual individuals went, or very the Talmidei Chacham, the many Tosafists went with their families and their students, indicates this is more for a religious reason. The question is, why we have two separate opinions here of Tosafists? Rav Chaim Cohen says, there's no mitzvah of making aliyah nowadays. And Rav Shimshon of Sanz, the Rosh Mishantz, he lived maybe one generation later, he leads a group of 300 people, around 300 people, to Eretz Yisrael. Why does he take a different stance than Rav Chaim Cohen? And Rav Chaim Cohen's position seems more surprising and more of a departure from the simple reading of the Gemara. Simple reading of the Gemara is that it's a mitzvah to make aliyah, and one spouse can compel the other to do that. Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik believes Rav Chaim Cohen's position is based on how the Ashkenazic community saw itself. They saw itself as the perfect halacha community. They think that we are the embodiment of what tradition is all about, so why leave? There were crusades and rampant slaughter, but people felt their lives where they were is ideal. And they felt, why should we make aliyah? They just experienced the first crusade probably a number of years back, not so long ago. So why should we leave? We can't keep mitzvot there, it's dangerous, and we live in an idealized society. Professor Soloveitchik argues that in general that the Tosafists believe that if their community consistently followed a particular practice, then that practice itself became the correct interpretation of halacha, even when it seemed to conflict with the Talmud. In the case of Eretz Yisrael, the Talmud seems unequivocal. Every Jew should move there, and a spouse could even compel the other to relocate. One might suggest that the Tosafists simply acknowledge the ideal, but recognize that not everyone could actualize it. Yet, as Professor Soloveitchik explains, their reasoning did not operate in that register. Their hesitation was not simply pragmatic, but interpretive. They argued that the difficulty in sustaining halachic life in Eretz Yisrael meant that in practice, the mitzvah did not obligate them in their generation. This reason is not present in the Talmud, but it's consistent with the way the Tosafists justified other practices, such as their unique stances on martyrdom, where they held that in some circumstances they could kill themselves rather than convert to Christianity. They might even be able to kill a child because they were afraid that the crusaders would kill them and then convert their children. And this certainly, these positions certainly diverge from straightforward Talmudic readings. Rav Shimshon of Sens, the Rosh Mishantz, a generation later, changed. It's not clear exactly why, but this was in the beginning of the 13th century, maybe since it was a quieter time, the worst of Crusader violence was behind them. Professor Canifogel suggests that the Aliyah of 1211 reveals an important facet of Tosafist piety, an aspiration towards the spiritual heights associated with Eretz Yisrael, coupled with a cautious and realistic acknowledgement of the dangers and limitations that often made such aliyah untenable. This episode thus becomes a lens through which to understand the broader Tosafist struggle to balance halachic ideals with lived historical circumstances. Looking at how the Tosafists discuss aliyah help us see a bigger picture about migration, how halacha responds to changing circumstances. As Jewish communities move from the Golanic world into medieval Ashkenaz, new realities, danger in the roads, unstable politics, and questions about which mitzvot could be kept forced the scholars and the rabbinic leaders to rethink earlier sources. The disagreements between Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen and Rabbeinu Shimshon of Sens are not just about one halachic detail. They show how community situation and mindset shape its decisions about whether to move, when to move, and why. Aliyah in the Tosafist time meant something very different what it means in the days of the Gemara, and different again from what it means today. For some Tosafists, like Rabbeinu Chaim, the dangers and the inability to keep many mitzvot made aliyah practically impossible. For others, like Rav Shimshon of Sens and those who joined the 1211 group traveling to Eretz Yisrael, the spiritual pull of the land outweighed the risks. Their views reflect two sides of the same struggle. balancing religious ideals with real world conditions. This pattern is something we still recognize. People today make aliyah or choose not to for a mix of reasons: safety, spirituality, identity, opportunity, or responsibility to family. The Tosafists show us that these are not new questions. Jewish law, halachas, always had to respond to shifting realities, and each generation has had to interpret the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael in light of its own challenges. In the end, the Tosafist debates teach us that migration is never only about geography. It's about how a community sees itself, what it values, and how it weighs risk against religious aspiration. And it is in navigating that tension between danger and hope, practicality and idealism, that halacha continues to guide Jewish life.